Adam Carolla here with an important message. We've worked the body, and the troll is against the ropes. The patent troll has thrown everything he's had at us, and we're still standing tall. We're going to wrap this thing up with a big haymaker. By clicking the Amazon banner on this show's website, we'll get a little kickback from every purchase you make, and it'll go directly to the Podcast Defense Fund. So whether it's school supplies or a radar detector, we're going to get a little bit to deal the final blow and knock them out. So spend away, and thanks to everyone for your support.
Buying a car can be a stressful experience, but TrueCar is changing car buying forever. Yes, TrueCar helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Last month, over 45,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network and TrueCar.com. Users save an average of $3,046 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. And the third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Every day, TrueCar.com users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Nicole Polizzi, but you may know me as Snooki from MTV's Jersey Shore. I totally feel like Snooki doesn't exist anymore, so I want you guys to get to know Nicole. Download my new podcast, Naturally Nicole, at podcastone.com. A lot has changed in my life with becoming a mother, getting married, losing weight, being fit. So be a part of my new, fantastic, fabulous world. Download Naturally Nicole every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome, Dr. Podcast. Got to get it on. That is, of course, from the Swing and Sounds of Dr. Podcast, which you can get at drdrew.com. And please be sure to click through the Amazon banner to support the Corolla Pirate Ship. Keep the winds in the sail of this now, this sort of the schooner. It's no longer a little pirate ship. It's sort of a schooner now. And but we got to keep this thing afloat. So please do. And also support the people that support the shows by using their products, and they usually tend to be quite good. So, and check out the Swing and Sounds Part 2 and Part 3. They're now available, and you'll hear them throughout the show. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Bruce Heischhaber.
How are you doing, my friend? Great to be here.
It's good to see you. We've never done the show by ourselves.
No, it's frightening. I think I accidentally showed up at Loveline a couple times, but I was overwhelmed by your...
Sorry, that was fucked stupid schedule stuff. But more importantly, normally we are interfered with by co-hosts and things. We're rarely by ourselves.
Yes.
So this will be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I can bang the mic, I can stutter, I can do anything and not have the...
Well, you've still got Gary and Chris out there. Who knows what they might...
They don't intimidate me. Right. Not like that.
Oh, Adam intimidates you.
Seriously? Well, I sort of enjoy, you know, your ability to analyze personalities is epic, but I like the abuse in a way. I enjoy the abuse.
What do you think that is?
I'm not going there.
You want to talk about anything personal?
I'm codependent.
Because I don't think anybody knows your story or anything, really. Right?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it?
I have a good story.
Well, you told me once that you had some abuse growing up.
Right.
And so maybe that's where this feels familiar. Maybe Adam is sort of like dad or
yes.
whatever.
Dysfunctional family. I had some abuse when I was younger. More abuse now.
But not intimidating abuse. What is this music? Huh?
He works the yard to keep his Honda full of gas. With jail in his hair, he's not too bad. He's got good lenses, but real bad frames. Some call him Bruce, but there's another name. We call him Dr. Sam. We call him Dr. Sam.
Great, who did this? Jerry?
Rich
and Banks. Awesome. You're like you've reached stature
all
of like
Bruce.
Robin Quivers. You know, people have songs in for her, and nobody, not just anybody, gets a theme song.
You know, I was hoping you wouldn't play that because I don't want Dr. Drew to feel bad because I guess you don't have your own.
I don't have my own theme song. I feel diminished, but it's all right. It's all right. The gauntlet is down.
You know, it's funny. The people that listen to Adam's podcast, there's some very bright people.
I've clearly
Dr. Handman, who's a noted rectal surgeon at the hospital I'm at. People will listen religiously, and then they hear that and they say, "Wow, you're really appreciated by that crowd here.
You've made it."
But anyway, so
do you listen to Stern at all, Howard Stern?
Yeah, I used. Yeah.
Well, now Robin has songs all the time. People send in stuff like every day. There's a new theme song for her, and Hansy has a theme song, and you know, all these different people. These Whack Packers have theme songs. People, out of love and affection, spend the time and energy to concoct songs. That's not easy.
Yeah, no, I don't know where that came from. I don't know whose idea
Rich
it was.
Banks. But Rich Banks. Thank you, Rich.
It certainly resonates a sort of discordant chord in my mind.
So you had some abuse growing up, and so Adam feels familiar.
Yeah.
I did, you know, I had a certain amount myself, right? And so, yeah, makes sense.
And then I the codependency. I got into the field. I was dating someone who was actually alcoholic. I didn't know that. I was being very codependent, and then went into the addiction field. And I did some training. And the first thing they said is, they pulled me out and they said, "You really need to go to CODA meetings and address this issue, or you're going to be ineffective in the field." And
well, they saw it right away.
They nailed me for my
interesting. Well, I tell you, I think I had to go through hard knocks. I wish somebody pulled me aside. I was doing medical services in a psychiatric hospital, very codependent. Of course, the people with the personality disorder just fucking cleaned up with me. You know what we're – I have to kind of – how do you explain this to people? It's like there's certain people with certain character conditions where they either idealize or de-idealize people. You're either the best or the worst.
Right.
And for a young physician, it's very gratifying when someone goes, "Oh, you're doing such a great job. No one's ever helped me. You're so great. This is great." And you just keep giving and giving and giving, and they keep demanding and demanding and demanding until you literally – they're literally calling you at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning just to let you know, I think I have a runny nose. I just let you know. I know you're thinking of me. So and by the way, my knee itches, and it's
right.
I know it's 4 in the morning now, but you're so good. You're such a good – then you try to put a limit down. And you're the worst. You're a piece of shit. I'm going to sue you. And that's that's where codependents can get really sucked in. It's what Conrad Murray did, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what he did with Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have the financial rewards that he had for his codependent.
Right.
But I think that one thing I do when I was especially working with residents and medical students and in emergency medicine is just try to introduce people in training to personality disorders and addictive disorders. I mean, obviously, emergency medicine, you're seeing a high
lots
percentage.
Of it, yeah.
But also the ability to read your patients. I know my experience in med school and training.
Zero.
Anything psych.
Zero.
Right. And very sort of bad attitude towards anything presented to you as a psychiatric issue. Because, that's useless. People that do that don't know what they're doing.
Right.
But there's so many insights that I received from doing addiction medicine and learning about personality disorders. And the borderline person, just like you said, the patients said, "Oh, you're so wonderful. You're doing this for me, and you're the 99 other doctors were horrible and victimizing me, and you're the best." And then suddenly, boom, you get
you get sued,
right? And in emergency medicine, the frequent flyers, the most frequent flyers, sometimes they'll get to know you, and you feel those same buttons being pushed for the Norco, for the Vicodin,
opiate addicts. Are you seeing with the Affordable Care Act, is the flow and the makeup of the emergency room changing at all?
It's hard
to. Is it too early?
No, I mean, the emergency department I'm at, it's a large hospital in Southern California, and we've experienced a large volume increase, especially the last 6 months. Now, I think many people assume that they hear about Obamacare, they assume they're covered, and there seems to be an increased utilization of the emergency department. However, I was reading an article last night where it was from emergency medicine literature, and they're saying there's a lot being based on a study out of Oregon where a group of people were given Medicaid benefits, and they said there's a 40% increase in inappropriate ER use. Amongst ER, in emergency medicine, there's some doubt that giving increased access to care in general increases ER use inappropriately. But the average ER physician, I'd say, it seems like there is in the last 6 months, there's been a big increase in visits. And again, my bias, it seems like there are a lot of visits for inappropriate things, sprained ankles, runny noses, and whether educating the populace is the answer. I don't know what the answer is, but the Affordable Care Act.
What about it?
Well, again, it seems to me the 15,000 pages, I think if you look way down the line, what they're looking at is a single payer, which would to me be the VA system being the medical, sort of undermining insurance and ending up with the government being the single payer. But
great system.
Scary.
So you're not too enthusiastic about how things are going?
Not at this point, but it seems like it's so early in the game. I think if we can provide care to people that don't have care or insurance, that sounds like a great thing. But
right.
How that's implemented is the big question.
Yeah, I wish it had been more focused on insurance reform and tort reform.
Right.
And things that are really incredibly inefficient and causing trouble.
Right. Okay. All right.
What's that list of papers?
I've got some interesting stuff here. Some of it that I thought would be – it may be a little bit addiction medicine oriented, but just looking at the first thing I found that I didn't realize, HIV testing day is June 27th, which I believe is Friday.
Okay.
So that's something that's coming up and just going to
– this is going to be in July.
Oh, this is going to be in July. There you go. That gives you my –
it was Friday. Thanks for getting tested, everyone.
Yeah. Well, the same availability there. It's increasing. Okay. Some of the stuff I was reading that's interesting, I found this is something that's coming out – I don't know when it's coming out. But nicotine in e-cigarettes, nicotine found to be carcinogenic, which is something
– Nicotine itself?
Right.
Bullshit.
Yeah, well –
No
okay.
way.
Yeah.
Then why isn't there carcinogen of the mouth? Why isn't there head and neck cancer from the gum and the lozenges and all this stuff?
Well, this is a study done by a geneticist. And what they did, they exposed cells to nicotine and compared them to cells that hadn't been exposed. And what they found, that patterns of mutation were very similar to cells that were exposed to oxidative.
What was the concentration of nicotine they're exposed to? I mean, it might just be massively saturating and just change the chemistry on the base of stoichiometry or something.
That's a good question. It said... I didn't get that far. I read a review of the article, and they said
that does not fit my clinical experience at all. Right? Nicotine. I don't see where nicotine is carcinogenic. Do you think of nicotine replacement that people use for years and they're fine?
Well, I don't. What they're looking at is inhaled nicotine, and when people's nicotine, up until recently, hasn't been isolated as a chemical that we imbibe
for mouth, gums, and lozenges and patches. Right?
Right.
But there's some maybe – okay. So we don't know about direct effect on lung tissue. So maybe there's something there.
What their concern is, their concern was, first of all, the genetic mutations. It's similar to oxidative stress. But the concern is that people that are starting e-cigarettes, they're looking at long-term use. And I think you're looking at the oxidative stress over years. So years of isolated inhalation. So if you get somebody that was smoking cigarettes that starts – inhaling e-cigarettes, but
maybe
I think the concern is it. Another study.
You're worried about e-cigarettes.
Yeah, I think so because I see a lot of young people that are now
vaping.
Vaping, and a lot of them. I've seen some of the guys I work with.
I'm concerned. I'm concerned that people jumped to it's got to be bad. There's an awful bias against it. You know what I mean? I mean, we can't have a nicotine product that is not unsafe.
Right.
That's illegal. I mean, we'll not have that. We'll not hear of it.
Right.
They didn't say, hey, this may well be safe. It may be an answer for smoking. Let's look into this and double check and kind of not get too enthusiastic. They said, bad. It's got to be bad.
Right.
And that troubled me a lot.
Right.
Still troubles me because I think it may be the answer to cigarettes.
That's what I thought. Now, reading this was...
It's a concern, but it doesn't fit my clinical experience at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Another study, it did show that inhaling, that going to e-cigarettes had like 20%, I don't know if it was a 1 year, but the effectiveness for people stopping tobacco smoking was higher than anything else for e-cigarettes.
It was effective.
It was very effective.
Yes.
Yeah. And that intuitively, that's what I think. Reading this, it was, it's obviously more studying.
More study needed this, no doubt about that.
Right.
Let me ask you about this. The Oz controversy, him getting called in the cup. What do you feel about that?
You probably know him. I don't know him. But I have watched the show sporadically and some of the information. I think he's very high energy and I think he's very positive. Now,
Doing television.
He's doing television. And I've talked to you about this. I know you have a high level of concern for salaciousness affecting the presentation of what you know, many times very important topics.
Yeah, yeah.
For him, things like I was channel surfing, as I often do, and he was talking about 2 kiwi fruits a day for 8 weeks, decrease in coronary plaque. And just stuff like that. Okay. No.
No, but that seems weird, but okay.
Maybe right.
If that data out there, it's almost the same as you bringing up the nicotine and cancer. It's like, well, there's some data
let's
on
look
that.
At it. Right. So I found that I don't even understand the controversy. I guess it doesn't sound like he's promoted his own products.
No.
And that's what struck me is why are they lambasting
him?
And
why are they spending taxpayer money and congressional time
going after
this?
I was not understanding that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, because it's cheapening his professional demeanor.
Right.
And why should he to cheapen his status as a physician?
Right. But I think it's similar to what you do on Loveline. Well, not in any negative sense, but bringing sometimes unpalatable or topics that are not easily presented. I mean, if you can get an audience to listen,
yes.
And I think he has a lot of people that are unhealthy,
yes.
Not exercising.
Yes.
Right.
And so he overstates a couple things. He uses language that's excessively enthusiastic because God knows if some fucking producer made him – just said, just read it. It's fine. Then people won't listen if you don't read it. Just read it. He blinks. He reads it. Then gets used to reading stuff like that. And all of a sudden he's using language that's excessive. That's what
right.
He has to be destroyed because he's using language that's excessive? Is it we have to destroy the guy?
I thought I missed something in the news reports because
no.
Having watched him, it seems like he's bringing – very positively presented information
super bright
on health.
Guy, Harvard right. Trained, cardiothoracic surgeon.
Columbia, right.
Columbia University
amazing.
Professor. I mean, amazing. Now, he's not doing some surgery anymore. Never did primary care. I mean, and he's talking about primary care topics, and that always worries me when guys have never done that.
Absolutely.
But okay, fine. That's my personal concern. I still don't think he shouldn't do it. He should do it because
right.
It's important messaging. And it's, yeah, it's hyperbole. He's overstated it.
Walking a minefield. I've seen some of the criticism you've had, and I've read what you said on the air verbatim, and it's just it becomes your fodder for people that have to create press. They have to create
yes
controversy, and
yes.
The longer they can keep it. I don't know how you've done it all these years, because especially on Loveline, some of the things that come up, I've told my friends, I said, if I did that show 5 days in a row, I would get in trouble. It's
something would happen.
Very difficult.
Somebody would say, yeah, it is very difficult, and it's very hurtful when you're trying to help people,
right.
And by the way, physicians need to be in media as much as possible. A couple of the journalists were like, no, doctors need to be off television. Are you fucking kidding me? So it's what, just journalists and attorneys? That's who should be on in media? The exact wrong people that should be in media, that, as opposed to people that actually care about humans and know what they need and what's healthy for them? And we'll make mistakes.
Right.
We will. All of us will.
Well, in law, when I watch two lawyers, at the end of it, I don't learn anything, and then I have no idea what the truth is because they're usually both so effective and presenting their side of the argument.
But and so what? What,
right.
what do they have to offer humanity?
Nothing.
It's like, what are you learning from standpoint of living a better life or
right.
good life?
So now the American Bar Association is going to go after you, Drew.
They probably are. You saw the endometriosis thing I had to deal with,
I
right?
did. I didn't. I wasn't going to mention that specifically. But that's what that was one of the things I read, and I was just – it was like there, but for the grace of God, I didn't have your fame and stick my – you didn't stick your foot in your mouth, though. I mean, it was clear what you were saying, and it was – I thought, wow, that's a great point. And then all of a sudden – you've got and really I could say something about fibromyalgia right now but probably
well let's get into it. Let's get into fibromyalgia. Because here's the deal. Fibromyalgia is a
waste basket.
Which was the term I use, which is a term doctors use amongst themselves.
Right.
To describe doctors throwing diagnoses into a bin when they can't come up with something definitive, right?
Right.
That's it, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Doesn't mean what's in the bin is waste. We just throw them in the bin because we can't come up with anything better. You and I would agree fibromyalgia is a real syndrome.
Right.
Causes severe misery.
Still poorly understood, but better understood.
Severe misery. And severe disability, and is a bona fide syndrome. Not a disease, syndrome.
Right.
So a syndrome is a constellation of diseases. And we don't even know all the different diseases that go into the syndrome of fibromyalgia yet, right?
Right.
Would you agree, in my opinion, most of the fibromyalgia I deal with, which is disabling, it can be awful, primarily is associated with a sleep disturbance?
Absolutely.
Okay. And the sleep disturbances have many causes, including anxiety, depression, primary sleep disorders. It's just sleep. And I'm of the opinion that they don't focus enough on restoring the sleep. If they got the sleep restored, regardless of what's causing the sleep problem, the fibromyalgia would get a lot better. And not opiates. Opiates are not the answer for fibromyalgia.
Right. So you hit the nail on the head, because my experience is I'm in the emergency department and I'm seeing when I see fibromyalgia, it's many times let's refill the Norco Percocet, OxyContin, whatever else.
And listen, now I'm going to say we're not interested in taking away your pain meds for people with chronic pain. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
What I'm saying is what we know as people that work in this field all the time is that your pain's not going to get better until you get off the opiates. Now, if you get off them or not, that's on you. But your pain is – there's a part of your brain called the insular cortex that goes insane from chronic opiate use, causes hyperalgesia. Pain is actually – well – the insulin doesn't cause the hyperalgesia, but there's a syndrome of hyperalgesia from chronic opiate use, which is such that pain gets worse from the opiates. It's sustained and intensified by the opiates. And the part of the pain that we associate with the misery is mediated by the insular cortex. So the misery component of pain is absolutely off the chart.
Right.
And that's not going to get better until you get off the opiates.
Right.
Right? We agree with that?
No, totally.
All right.
Totally
so there's
agree.
No disagreeing with us on any of these points.
Right.
So for anybody that has to take off after us for even discussing fibromyalgia, and please, I'm happy to hold an episode of fibromyalgia because it's a really serious condition. But if you have any issues with us, contact Bruce Heischauber. Where should they call you?
How about my Twitter at Dr. Bruce H, which unfortunately I don't. I understand you. Lynette told me you religiously answer all of your tweets and questions.
No. No, I do my own tweets, except for once a day someone at HLN is allowed to identify that she's tweeting on my behalf.
Oh.
Her name is Kate. She'll say, hi, it's Kate, and she'll give a tweet on the heels of that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I do my own tweets. I get thousands of questions every day. Literally, they'll be like, they'll lay these incredibly long, complicated medical problems. It would take conservatively 4 to 6 years of intensive work to manage,
right?
And they want a 140 character solution,
right? So this is
you just can't even answer. You can't even
codependency would not allow.
I'm bothered that I can't. That's where the codependency come in. I'm affected by it. I can't just like, oh, don't be silly. I'm like, oh God, I wish. Oh gee, I'm such an asshole. I can't answer that. Oh, Jesus.
All right. So I've just got to bounce this one off you because this is.
Hey, before you do, but the codependency thing, I remember once when one of the former co-hosts of this of Loveline yelled at you severely. Remember that whole horrible, horrible, horrible abusive yelling? And what you said to me goes, I've not been talked to like that since I was like 6 years old. And I thought, wow, that was telling. Because I had the same experience. I had the same incredible, incredible abuse. Remember that? I don't want to get into it too much, but I just wonder if you remember that whole experience.
Oh. I was thinking when a rock musician yelled at me like that, but yeah, I've had three experiences like that. But yeah. it does bring you back to some of the core issues around which some of these other things like codependency develop.
And so Adam is just a chronic low grade reminder.
Yeah. I remember one comment I made to him was self promotion. I remember I said that.
Adam?
I think you were actually in the room, and then he threw me out, and that was the first time I experienced that. Another, if you want an Adam anecdote, how about when he first started doing the show and I filled in, I brought him Trauma of the Gifted Child to read.
That's not him.
No, I didn't know him. He started to do the show and I said, this might be an interesting book to read.
That's so funny. Was that you, Trauma of the Gifted Child? It's me for sure.
Yeah.
Do we have that book up on my website? Chris, attention. Drama of the Gifted Child, is that up on the website?
It will be.
It will
if
be.
If it's
okay.
not, okay. But it should be.
Yeah, which... afterwards, I realized that probably was
that's not his
a good doorstop or books. And
oh, him reading, that already is a laughable
reading,
thing.
That's...
But that particular story is not his story. No.
But I thought it might have, you know, listeners galore that should read that book.
Yes.
I think it's a
great book.
Great book.
Love that book. So anyway, what's your article? You came in with a stack of fucking papers here.
Well, it's my own insecurity. It's because my lack of knowledge is
well, you know what's funny? When I first went up to Loveline, the first probably 6 months I went up there, I would bring textbooks with me.
Oh.
Maybe the first year or two.
Oh, absolutely.
That's funny.
As a physician, when I would fill in for you, I've stopped doing it, but I would have every kind of electronic little helper.
And, yeah.
Because it's – I think people don't realize when you're doing things like – there aren't a lot of physicians, I think, that do live questioning. I mean – I forget the name of some of the prominent radio people. A lot of that stuff, they know what they're going to be asked, and their in-depth what sound like off-the-cuff answers are not that.
Right.
To have that. But it's putting it. You do a very good job.
Well,
I mean,
thanks.
An incredible job. Because I'm on there, and sometimes it's also how to say, gee, I don't know at times.
Yes. And where to look for the answers.
Well, I thought, since this is airing in July, this is not so helpful. But this is a study looking at feel-good hormones and sun exposure. And you're probably going to question my... What they did, they took mice and 6 weeks of UV exposure, and they were bald mice. I assume there's some correlation to their opiate receptor systems. But they gave the mice the UV exposure at levels that they felt were similar to what we experience when we go out and sunbathe or use a tanning bed. And then they gave them an opiate blocker, and they experienced actual opiate withdrawal symptoms, shaking, teeth chattering, tremors.
What is the date on that study, the year?
This is just out of the Mass General, Harvard Medical School, and in the journal Cell. It's very recent.
Because I remember studies like that 10 years ago. They used to do stuff like that. That's interesting. There was a lot of experimentation with naloxone back a good 10 years ago in terms of trying to block effects of naturally occurring phenomena like light, like love, like attraction, things like that. You know, even social behaviors, they would try to see how they're affected by naloxone, which is interesting.
I think this came out in the last month or two.
That's interesting.
Because, again, there's another study that's also pretty recent where they're in Nature that was talking about sunscreen alone not protective against melanoma, which is there's so much melanoma, and I'm convinced I'm gonna get that.
That's my next cancer. I think about how much time I spent in the sun as a kid. It's sick.
Oh yeah,
it's bad.
Well, they talk about one severe sunburn increases your risk. I've had God knows how many
hundreds. You're so light skinned. Yeah,
and I think when we were younger, there was much less attention paid to going out with sunscreen. Right,
zero. I mean, I remember there was a product called Pre-Sun back in the 70s
to increase it.
No, but that was the first. Well, no, there was that stuff that made you
the baby oil and the cotton.
No, this was actually a blocking agent. It was the first SPF. I remember it was an 8, SPF 8.
Yeah,
It was significantly good for me because I was burning all the time, and it really helped me. But I remember no one ever advised you to put sunscreen on before you went in the sun.
I remember blisters. It was just horrible for me, and I'm lighter than you, so it was just horrible.
So, you know, I just went through prostate cancer, not just, had a whole year of prostate cancer, which was hellacious.
Yeah, I talked to you at Anderson's wedding, I think it was before anything was, you were just being
biopsied.
Checked. Right.
Oh, I hadn't been diagnosed yet?
No, I guess you had just been, that was October a year ago.
That was just a year ago?
A year ago, October. So it'll be 2 years this October.
2 years October.
So you're getting, okay.
I was on active surveillance at that point. Yeah. And about a year ago, they went, okay, that's it. There's too much. The Gleason scale, which is the way we measure tumor sort of activity or tumor aggressiveness, hadn't changed. But the volume had changed, which is a weird phenomenon that's really not talked about in the medical literature. And they don't really know what to do with that. So their thought was, we got to go. It just doesn't feel right. And there was a small finger heading towards the capsule that really almost made it.
Wow.
So it was just in time. But that is a brutal surgery. I'm not going to kid you. That is a brutal. I've talked to a number of people who have had it, and I think I'm really bad with surgeries because I've talked to like a lot of people. Pat O'Brien, a lot of people had it, and they're like, yeah, it's bad, but no big deal. I was brutalized by it.
Well,
6 months, I wasn't right.
I think you and I and Adam had hernia surgery within a year or two of each other. Mm-hmm. I was out for 5 days. It was like horrible pain.
Horrible pain, but like laid out.
It's
anesthesia just messes me up.
Yeah, and then I didn't like the Vicodin or Norco.
No, me too.
Because I took it for about 4 days, and then I felt like crap for a week. And I was like, that is amazing. It's like withdrawal, and I was taking it the way I was supposed to. But the pain level afterwards, because I know Adam belittles your pain threshold, and he was out hanging some sort of construction.
Hanging a door the next day. Yeah. But my thing was not the pain. It was the – and same thing, though there was a lot of pain with this one, but it's the sort of – out of itness, fatigue, weakness kind of thing that is just massive for me.
With the prostate.
Well, same with the hernia too, but with the prostate it was orders of magnitude worse. It was just and I went back to work in 10 days.
What type of surgery was it?
Da Vinci robotic, you know, total complete, what do they call it? Radical prostatectomy.
Right.
And everything's great. I mean, I have no complaints urologically, but 9 months I wasn't right. Yeah. Right. And I didn't even realize it. I kept sort of wiping out all the time, and I'd be worried about sleep and kind of always like low energy at times. But I was working out. I was working. But I just wasn't myself. And when I kind of came out of it about 3 months ago, 2 months ago, I was like, oh, shit. I've not been right the last 3 years. The entire time they were doing the surveillance, I think I was getting prostatitis, which is a deep-seated right. tissue infection. And I was aware I would be bad for 3 months after each biopsy. I think I was bad the entire time. And by the time I was healing, boom, new biopsy.
Now, does that affect, as being a physician, I remember a couple of injuries, a broken wrist, the hernia surgery. Afterwards, I think I had a higher level of empathy with patients going through post-surgical issues. And,
yeah.
I mean, there's always a high level of cynicism, I think, in medicine after years and years of practice. You know, when there's pain beyond what you'd expect or
yes.
med-seeking. I was reading an article on cynicism in physicians, and it was pointing out that it's sometimes a valuable...
To be a patient.
Character.
I wish I'd taken more pain meds. I wish I'd taken a lot more. That was a foolish thing on my part. I wish I'd been more assertive in my codependency because I had just terrible nursing the first night I was sick. And was aspirating and stuff. I was so weak. I couldn't reach the button to call the nurse. No one was checking on me for hours and hours and hours. It's bad.
That's
yeah. And but you know, but for the grace of God,
yeah,
there
yeah.
go.
yeah. When and yeah, I don't want to start talking about human growth hormone. What I've been looking into. I'm 59. And
I would love to take testosterone or human growth hormone. Nothing would make me happier.
I
just had my year urology check yesterday. I forgot to ask him about that. I'm afraid to ask.
I'm afraid. You know, I. Start reading the side effects and thrombosis and taking
for testosterone or growth hormone.
Well, I think you probably get enough testosterone increase when you take human growth hormone. But anything that is a chemical or drug taking it, then I start reading the side effects. But there's so many people I know, people in Hollywood, people with money now are really interested in human growth hormone.
These anti-aging things
and anti-aging medicine and
like what.
Well, I mean, the human growth hormone, for instance, it's
yeah.
so widely prescribed. And really, the literature, I don't think, is clear even at this point on, I mean, long term, it's been used in Europe for, I think, 2 decades on a much higher percentage of the population using it and not increasing life longevity. But I think the issue is, does it
quality of life.
Increase quality of life?
Or does it shorten life?
And that's
the bigger question.
I don't have the knowledge base. For it. I've read about it. I've run into people that in their 50s and 60s start using it that, you know, sleep, muscle, lean muscle, fat. Oh, absolutely. Measurable. And then there are, well, you see a lot of the advertising. So whenever there's, I guess what I need to do is really do a good lit search.
And, yeah.
But, you know, with thrombosis, just thrombosis alone and testosterone replacement, that's...
But isn't that in sort of extra physiologic levels of testosterone? Right?
Yeah, I guess so. But I guess what I worry about is it could happen with testosterone replacement at physiologic levels.
That's my question. And I would just like to get back where I was when I was 30.
Right.
That'd be great.
Right.
Be very happy.
Yeah.
I don't need to be Arnold.
No. Well, and the other theory on human growth hormone, even at our age, is if you exercise to the point of vomiting or just a super strenuous exercise, you can increase your own human growth hormone. But
well, I've noticed I've been exercising. Now that I'm back sort of physically, I've been really exercising aggressively. Again.
CrossFit level?
No, more like either heavy weights or long runs. And feel a lot better. A lot better. Let me ask this, gentlemen. Gary. Do we have phone calls? Is that what I'm saying here?
They're coming in, yeah.
Is that what these two are on hold?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Should I take a little break and then Bruce, I'll take a couple calls?
That'd be great.
All right. Take a quick break. Be right back after this.
Hi, folks. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, what's it like to have your oldest son join the Marines and head out? I'll let you know as soon as I can figure it out myself. Listen for free through iTunes or visit LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you here.
That, if I'm not mistaken, is volume 3 of the Doctor Who podcast. The Swinging Sounds of the Doctor Who podcast, yes?
Correct.
We should immediately get to work on Volume 4. Yeah. Christmas. We need a Christmas album.
Oh, of course you need a holiday
album.
Dude,
come on. Let's go.
We're doing it.
We seriously need to do that. So we'll start working on that right away. Gary, there we go. We're going to see what these calls are. Oh, good one. Let's go to Jacob. What's up, Jacob?
Hi. I got a question about salmonella.
Yeah.
I'm a cook, and the nitpicking at that place has just gotten horrible the last couple months. But the new thing is salmonella in the chicken, and how it's an attempted murder charge if it's not cooked all the way, and all this and all that. And I was just wondering how serious it really is.
Salmonella is pretty serious, particularly in young people. It's a terrible illness, and not only salmonella, but a campylobacter. I would think would be pretty common.
What's that?
It's another bad diarrheal illness. And so, okay. Yeah, chicken needs to be completely cooked. It needs to be well cooked.
Was there some concern about people washing the chicken first and then spreading the bacteria?
Well, the main thing is the separating the cutting boards of vegetables and meats, because there can be cross-contamination with salmonella.
It's not like norovirus. So that stuff, you can have 12 viral particles and contract the illness.
Right.
Not to downplay the...
Highly contagious.
Highly.
But norovirus cannot be as... It's not typically as devastating.
No.
Yeah.
No,
salmonella
absolutely.
Is rough times.
Right. And for extremely young or old.
Yeah. It can kill young or old people pretty easily. What's that, Jacob?
Can it really? Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, these are... The thing about our country is we're cavalier about medical conditions because we don't see them. They're all hidden in hospitals and things that people don't ever – that's why people can be so cavalier about vaccines. They've never seen a kid die of measles, and we see that not uncommonly.
Well, whooping cough deaths.
Whooping cough deaths.
Now way up in California.
Yeah, so people don't want to get their kids the pertussis virus. Tetanus.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about that in smoking, because you never see anybody with lung cancer because –
Well, you see lots of lung cancer, that's
well,
for sure.
I drive by a hospital. I'll just think of what's going on in that hospital.
Me too.
And then you look at media and just everything's so flowery and wonderful. And just I walk in the ER and somebody's having, you know, I see cachectic people from cancer, someone having a bone set. And it's so – people need, I think, to be more in touch with –
Death and dying and illness. I know, but we hide it away and we're ashamed of it. And we don't ever talk. We never see it. And so people are super cavalier about it.
Right.
And that's why, you know, when you, Jacob, you're like, how bad can this really be? Yeah, you've never seen it. And we've seen it.
Well, no, I haven't.
No, I know. I'm not blaming you. It's just that's the way we do things here. And people don't even talk about it. I mean, it's nasty. Illnesses are terrible.
Yeah.
And we pretend they don't happen because we're so fortunate to have this wonderful healthcare system.
And it's great. The healthcare systems, though, the marketing people are more and more aggressive in market. And it should be marketing a healthy lifestyle. And you see pictures of healthy people exercising. But then the reality of it is
we're biological. That's the reality of it.
Right. And sometimes I think it'd be a little more productive because of the smoking rates, the drug use, the things that we see that are. Up and up, and there seems to be a disconnect. And I think when kids are growing up to if they could see more of how a hospital works or what happens when people are...
Medical illnesses kill people routinely.
Right.
Addiction, routinely. And, you know, you and I dealing with drug addicts, it's like dealing with cancer. They just routinely die no matter what we do, no matter what anybody does.
Right.
It's a terminal condition in many cases.
And the misinformation. I had somebody that was in the early 20s tell me last week, well, you know, Molly's, I get the really pure stuff.
Oh, no, but that's the brilliance of the marketing. The MDMA is what harms the brain. The MDMA is what causes all the side effect. They used to think that they've told kids that, oh, no, an ecstasy was cut with the bad stuff. And it was the bad stuff it was cut with made people sick. No, it's the MDMA. It is the Molly itself that is the most dangerous piece.
Right. And if you can find a Molly the DEA does study the samples they get. And, the precursor chemicals come from China. That's the first thing that bothers me. China's China, but... Anything that comes out of China is suspect in terms of where it was produced. Is it what it said it was? And I just know what I'm seeing occasionally in the ER, not every day, but it reflects, I think, what's going on with the mollies, with the synthetic stimulants. We had somebody that came in and used a pencil to poke both their eyes out while under the influence of mollies. And it's the psychosis you see. And
could they restore the globes, or was that?
I don't know. They left, and you know the typical thing. I didn't see what happened. But it was
always one of the things that bothered me about ER docs is that they don't get to learn because they don't see the consequences of their mistakes. Right? I had an ER doctor, excellent ER doctor, who admitted one of my patients. You know, sometimes you guys will send people upstairs, you know, and we, as the internist, will meet them upstairs and not run to the emergency room if the ER guys tell us it's not an emergency.
Right.
And I had a patient with tachycardia and chest pain. And the doctor went, oh, he's got right bundle branch block, so you can't really read the anything. And that's just, I went upstairs, and he had hyper-acute changes, clearly. The repolarization changes were reversed. You know, usually the repolarization goes the opposite way of the prolongation of the. This is a technical issue with the EKGs. It was class. I mean, like should have been a textbook. Hyperacute changes in the setting of right bundle branch.
Well, usually you hear about that through the quality assurance committee.
Well, I didn't make a big deal out of it, but we had to take the guy to the cath lab instantly.
Wow.
But he'd sat up there about 3 or 4 hours in, you know, pain on a nitrate drip, and I was like, whoa, she couldn't have read that. I mean, for God's sakes, it was so classic.
Well, sometimes I wonder,
and she never learned it. Because I never went down and went, hey, by the way, it's, you know, this was a swing and a miss here.
Wow.
And there was a lot of stuff like that. I see it a lot when people leave the ER. I don't even know who the ER director was that sent them out. And they never learn the consequences. That would be hard for me, not learning and seeing, you know.
Well, there are two things. First of all, there's so many people that wait up to several days in the ER now because of
Oh, so you get to see
ER.
So you do get to see some stuff.
We're really good friends with the internists now.
That's good.
We buy them coffee. But the other thing is the humanity. Yesterday, when I was ready to leave, a police officer came in, a Fontana PD, and what are you doing here? Oh, well, I'm going to check on an infant I gave CPR to 2 weeks ago that's still up in the NICU. It was a near drowning.
Ugh.
But I was just thinking about the same thing. It's like checking up. Wow, it's the connection. Sometimes I wonder if ER physicians, there's a disconnect because you see so much trauma.
Well, in a way, I want you to be disconnected, right? Because I want you just to be in there, you know, stabilizing stuff and not having a big reaction. Right.
Right. Well, when my son falls and hits his head and blood squirting out of his scalp, I realize, you know, there's a connection you don't want to have.
Right.
You don't want to be your family's physician.
That's right.
You don't want to be Corolla's family physician.
No. Speaking of Corolla, here's another call. This is by the way, Chris, do you have letters too today?
Yeah, I could get you guys.
All right, let's talk to Alex now. Alex, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call. And Bruce, really interesting e-cigarette article. I'm an e-cigarette user, and I'm always trying to get my hands on more information. Anyway, a question for both of you, mainly for Bruce. How have you guys endured so many years of Corolla abuse? Bruce, especially you, on old love lines, going from the car you drive to your coffee to how you're saying words. I mean, do you take it all in jest? Do you just kind of brush it off?
I don't want to compare it to, like, people that are into S&M, but there's – first of all, it's sporadic.
Familiar.
And I think maybe I am a little more let's see, masochistic. I'd be the masochist. He'd be the sadist,
right?
If we both enjoy it.
Yes.
And sometimes I like the attention. It's sort of like, you know, negative attention. Maybe there's some analogies to some
of the medical things we see. But it's the same phenomenon you're talking about, though, where abuse feels like at least a relationship.
Right. So
caring.
I remember
enough to abuse me.
I remember once, I don't know if I should say this years and years ago, I think I said, how do you, 5 nights a week, 2 hours with Adam? And I think Drew said something about fingernail scratching on a chalkboard as an analogy. But so for me, it's very sporadic. I also, and I think Drew would agree, I think Adam's one of the brightest, funniest people I know. And I don't really mind if I'm the butt.
Right. So you know your role. Your job is to be a punching bag.
That's it. I mean, I bring these articles. And
so you don't take it personally. You don't take it personally. Sometimes?
No. Being in the kitchen at Adams and having his wife want me to support her theory that he's Asperger's, and then bringing Drew's name in as so you can imagine Adam in his robe with a cup of coffee and Lynette, Dr. Bruce, I was talking to Drew, and he and I both think Adam's Asperger's because he has no empathy. What do you think?
Here's what I get from
now,
Adam.
There.
Here's what I get from
whoosh, out. Can I get out of here now? It's like,
here's what I get from Adam. Stop talking to my wife.
Right.
Don't talk to my wife so much. Don't talk to her. Stop it. So I stopped. The strange thing about his diagnoses is I swear to God, for years would go, I'm a narcissist. And he and I would actually talk about it on the air and how even in his group, he had a very intensive group therapy he was with for years. And that seemed to be where he was really making progress in his therapies. He never did much one-on-one. and their narcissism was brought up and being addressed, and he and I decided he was sort of a kind of a treated narcissist, you know, and that's all right. That's not a judgment. But I remember they did a big LA Times magazine article on him, and my comments were in the opening sequence. And I said, well, he's a partially treated narcissist. He'll tell you that. And he's just like, what do you mean? You guys offended.
Oh, said, yeah.
What do you mean? That was your terms. We discussed this a million. Is that funny how well, I don't know.
Euphoric recall and selective memory. Yeah, and then there's changing history.
Yeah. And the Asperger's thing, to me, I just say, you know, he likes mechanical things, doesn't make good eye contact. Has trouble with social cues, and it's his genius. He should embrace it. Whatever that thing is that makes him different. I had Stephen Porges analyze him one time, who's a polyvagal theory. You ever heard of that?
No.
It's a theory. It's a great theory about how the vagus nerve connects to our body, and really is, you know, people forget that the vagus nerve is this nerve that comes out of our brain and goes right basically to our heart. But it also goes to the diaphragm, the subdiaphragm. It's the main nerve out of the parasympathetic nervous system. And we were always trained that it's sort of the brakes. And the sympathetic system is the accelerator and the parasympathetic is the brake. Turns out it's not like that. It's much more hierarchical.
More
it's much more complicated. And a lot of it is afferent. It goes into the brain. So all our gut feelings and whatnot and our feelings of hurt in our heart comes from the vagus afferent to our brain. And Adam has some vagal tone that's peculiar. His vagal system is unusual. I think he's still in the – there's two vagal nuclei in the at the level of the – yeah, at the level of the pons, I think it is. And in any event, it's the nucleus ambiguous and the dorsal motor complex, the ambiguous. And the earlier – the more primitive system is a reptilian system that really, and it's associated with low heart rate and dissociation and disconnect. Take it out his pulse sometime. He's like 40. And he notices things because he's so slow. Everything in the environment gets in. He can't screen it out. And that's a unique biology. And if you have that and Asperger's, boy, you're going to be seeing the world differently than everybody else.
Right. And a disturbing characteristic I feel that he has a genius ability to remember conversations almost verbatim. At least that's been my experience, because I've something that happened. I was on a Crazy Love Line show with No Doubt, where he made a joke about Indians. Yeah,
were you on that one?
Yeah,
you really?
Oh yeah, I recounted it, and I tried to recount what was said, and he goes, no, and then he told me exactly the sequence of, and then I went back. And he was...
No, well, listen, he told that story 40 times.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah, he's revivified that story with me many, 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 many times. So we've sort of hammered out exactly what was said.
I see.
Because he wanted to understand why they were so offended.
Yeah, you can't remember I was on there because I, as usual, didn't say a whole lot.
Well, you know what it was? I was on the next one.
Oh.
And they were not happy with
no.
me. Mohammed.
Yeah.
Hey, now.
Yeah, hi.
What's up?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Drew. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet.
Just had a quick question. My ex-girlfriend of 2 years, we broke up previously because she started seeing other guys, and she was going out on the, you know, quote-unquote, you know, dates, I guess.
Wait. And, she was cheating?
Well, that's what I was thinking, you know. She was going out with other guys, saying that she was just having fun, going out to lunch and playing golf and, you know, et cetera. And she thought it was just, you know, just fun as friends type of thing, but I don't think she understood that it was cheating.
It upset you. Yeah, it upset you. It's fine.
Yeah. So, you know, I stopped talking to her for about maybe a year and a half, and, you know, I kind of got over it and started talking to her again. And, you know, I tried talking to her, and we tried going out and things like that, and it just seemed like she wasn't interested in me anymore, and... you know, I think she was just trying to get closure for the whole situation, and she was trying to get back with me or whatever. And once I started getting back in love with her and things like that, she just started putting me towards the side and saying that, you know, she needs more time. And
all right, get out of there. Scram.
Scram?
Yeah, do not put up with that.
Yeah, that's
you want to be with somebody that really, really, really wants to be with you, not somebody that's even ambivalent. Get out of there. You're not married to her. You're 21. You got that's what you do when you're 21. You come together, you break apart. That's all right.
How many phone calls like that have you received on Loveline where somebody is obviously being abused or misused, and they're asking the question of should or I should? What's
tens
has
thousands.
He been abused? What do you
thousands.
Think his background?
Okay. I have an interesting phenomenon. You still there, Muhammad?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I get the feeling that he comes from a highly perfectionistic. Was your mom like super perfectionistic?
Like well, my dad is actually.
Yeah, like super perfectionistic, controlling, and not a lot of empathy and autonomy. And
yeah,
so,
you're right.
Yeah, and that's just the feeling. And strangely, I get that feeling right. from him, which is a weird. I've sort of learned to do that over the years. And so, as such, understanding other people's motives and feelings and his response to them is confusing because he's used to people being very enmeshed right. with him.
So, yeah.
So, Muhammad, you need a little bit of, you know, we're just talking, you know, speculating here. A little therapy would go a long way, right?
In terms absolutely.
Of teasing
insight
that out.
Rather than asking, should I be with her, understanding why you seek to be with that person.
Why you seek to be with that person and how to not tolerate that kind of behavior anymore. What do you got there, Bruce? You're seeking some literature.
Oh, no. I was just, we were talking about ER. I was just thinking about DAB.
Dad?
D-A-B.
What's that?
Breaking DAB.
What's that?
DAB, it's manufactured. You take a hydrocarbon solvent. Oh, I'm great with the microphone here.
Yeah, you are. If I were Adam, you would have heard about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe I could bang it a little bit there, and thank God I can do it. No, but DAB, it's made by running a hydrocarbon solvent such as butane through marijuana leaves or stems.
Oh, Jesus.
And then you come up with a THC of 75 to 90%.
Oh, this is like wax.
It's like a waxy
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, the wax.
Well, I've seen people. You know, I have some friends of friends, and I have seen them use this stuff. And these guys are people that smoke every day, and they're yeah. smoking really powerful weed. But they were just they were quoting in here Rolling Stone magazine talking about being cosmically baked.
Yeah, they start hallucinating.
They get psychotic, and, yeah. they're just out of their minds.
Yeah.
And so some of the people I see coming in the ER that have bizarre accidents or crazy, crazy behavior, and all they do is the parents or the family say, oh, all they do is pot. But now they're starting to get hold of this stuff. And it's like the other thing we're seeing is people with severe burns because if you're making this stuff on your own using, hydrocarbon solvents, the fumes are heavier than air.
Blow up.
Explosions. There was some in L.A. County, a large significant percentage of burn unit patients. So they're comparing it to, people that want to be the Walter White of weed.
Breaking DAB.
Breaking Got DAB. It. So there are T-shirts now out there that say Breaking DAB.
Oh, that's interesting. Is it worse in Colorado, or is that stuff all being shipped to Colorado?
You know, interesting. In Colorado, they have industrial processes to make it.
So it's all safe.
Well, there's still people trying to make it, but...
Yeah,
it's one of the things that when you see a phenomenon, I mean, it's probably like the grid thing and with HIV, we were seeing the results of it and didn't really know where this was coming from. But with substance abuse, especially in the ER, you start seeing, pencils in the eyeballs and, well, they weren't doing drugs. They just do. And people that usually just smoke pot now, they're just psychotic episodes in young people. And sometimes the effects predate understanding where it's coming from. But yeah. Well, the marijuana thing, I mean, I get off on that tangent quite a bit because I'm really concerned, as I feel you are, the long-term consequences of marijuana use, especially when there's so many people now starting to smoke it in their teens. It's like dropping the drinking age from 21 to 18 increases use most dramatically, I think, in 16 and 17-year-olds because of the availability. And then you start seeing the increased mortality with accidents. And with the marijuana, that's what I'm seeing. Younger people, they're starting younger. The availability is there.
So that's the big concern, is that the fact that younger people have longer. The other thing, most of the brain effects on pot are reversible in adults, but seem to be irreversible in kids.
Right.
And that's a real concern. That's
right.
Real concern.
Then long-term, and then I think a lot of the data is not there yet, but I think with this big increase in use, there's going to be a lot more.
Are people going to believe it or want to hear it?
No.
Yeah, so
no, I think every state is going to legalize it.
I agree. Well, whatever. I mean, that's, people. I think laws are about what the people need to decide. I don't really care. I really don't care. But there will be consequences.
Yeah.
And I hope they'll listen to whatever we observe. I mean, like you said, we're starting to see stuff and learn from it. That's all.
Right.
Don't necessarily change the laws. Maybe they'll change the laws back. I don't know.
I know we're almost out of time. How about one more addiction?
Yeah, go ahead.
South Korea's game addiction law.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So this is good. So South Korea, the government has a law which would regulate gaming, electronic games like drugs or alcohol. And I think they passed it. They were debating whether they should pass it. But the issue is they have places there. They call it PC Bang, where you go to parlors that have the most sophisticated electronic equipment.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had a law in 2011. I believe they banned adolescents between midnight and 6 a.m.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But there were cases in the news there. In April, there was a man who was addicted to video gaming. He let his two-year-old son die of starvation
after my God.
Playing online games and PC bangs and not returning home for several days.
Yeah.
So I don't know we have the same phenomenon here. PC bangs are places where they group and play. But I know playing online against other people is commonplace. I know my kids, they're racing cars and crashing.
What do you think about that sort of process addiction? Think it's real?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the dopamine system, you're far better versed in it
but
than
my,
I am.
But my thing is that normally when I see the game addictions, there's usually a primary psychiatric issue.
Right.
Usually. I mean, yes, the games are an issue. Yes, they have sort of an addictive quality. Yes, there's a compulsion there, but ultimately they're depressed or ultimately they're OCD.
When I see a daily pot smoker, it's like how many times are they self-medicating something else?
They're always trying to regulate emotions.
Right. Okay.
But the problem is, yes, when it's a chemical agent, yes, you trigger a second problem.
Right.
You know, it's unusual to love it so much that you just keep going with it, even though the whatever primary issue you're dealing with is sort of no longer an issue. It's very, very unusual. Right. I mean, it's addiction and dysregulation.
Right. No, that's a very good point. Well, I think with the gaming thing, when I saw some of the violent, episodes, the kid in Connecticut where went into the school and then it comes out. I think the availability of extremely violent video games and the level of consumption, it's mixing the wrong person with a large number of hours a day with. You don't think so? Or?
No, I do. I think that it's an issue. I just think that what I've noticed is that usually you have to treat a psychiatric problem to make the – I'm not saying you ignore the game compulsion, but the psychiatric issue, if it's not treated, is the primary problem.
Right, exactly.
While with addiction, this sort of real addiction, you have to really kind of – at minimum, the addiction has to be treated first. Worst situation, you have two primary problems. You know, you have a mood disturbance and a personality problem.
Right.
What else from trauma, and you have addiction.
I guess the issue I run into, people will, again, in emergency medicine or a loved one that has a chemical problem. I know somebody just came to last week. They said, I know this individual has a problem, and it was a behavioral issue, and they're doing such and such a behavior. How can I intervene? And the Well, if you have somebody who thinks at risk for, say, of acting out violently, but
right.
they haven't crossed a certain line, you can't force them into treatment. You can't.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's sort of a big issue these days in the media, which is why Santa Barbara had to happen.
Right.
You know, the guys sort of have violent stuff.
And the police showed up.
They didn't do a gun check or a weapons check. I mean, what should we be doing with this? Where is this? You know, don't you think you would have been a little more aggressive with that kind of a kid?
Doing what? Forcing him into treatment? The gun issue, the family said, I don't think the family was aware he had guns.
But why didn't they do a weapons check in his place? Why didn't they search?
Well,
I think we're a little too, PC is not the right word.
Well, it's, yeah, that type of thing. Though.
Yeah.
It's not infringing on anyone's rights based
yes,
on.
Right. That the rights of the individual is exceeding the rights of the community.
Right.
And that's not good.
Well, I think in addiction medicine, you have the intervention. You have some tool in where you're intervening and you are saying you have the right, but these are the consequences if you continue to exercise
right.
that right. With what you're seeing with violent acting out, then in retrospect, I don't know that is there a new tool we can develop to address the precursors of these horrible
events?
I bet
in almost every one of those cases you will see situations where families were not following the direction of physicians or therapists.
Right.
Almost, I guarantee you, almost all of them. I mean, think of the kid in Connecticut who sat in his room, psychotic, with the windows boarded up, and his mom was only allowed to communicate through him through notes under the door. really? A kid doesn't need somebody to just get the fuck in there and do something?
Right.
Okay? Right. And the kid in Santa Barbara, you're trying to mainstream this kid? He has a BMW.
Well, it's say, like, new BMW, yeah, and he's sent off to
school. Sent away to school? Right. It's like, hey, come on now. Wait a minute. Yes, I understand you would wish that for this child. No, he's sick.
Right.
I mean, if he had a broken leg or if he had a tumor, you wouldn't do that. Why mental health we have to treat differently? You know, we need to. Well, our judgment needs to be better. It's all I'm saying. We need to use judgment.
Well, are you
judgment
and I helicopter? Are we helicopter parents? Because I know you'd be aware your kids are in college of certain behaviors and activities. But is there a certain awareness level that you can teach parents, or if you knew?
I think it's judgment. I think it's being willing to judge, being willing to follow your instincts, and being willing to, and really. It really is listening to the judgment of clinicians, ultimately. I mean, if somebody says you don't want to hear it, your child's sick, you don't want to hear that. But if they tell you that, you gotta listen. You got to believe it.
Yeah.
No?
No.
I mean, it's a horrible thing. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to deal with. But
right. But is there an education problem? How do you prevent Columbine? Because the Columbine issue, if the parents were more aware of the content of the music and looking at the behavior and access to weapons – so how do we go back or in the future? Because the questions I ask myself, because it's so
– you monitor the websites. You monitor the computers.
Right.
You
having a – but are those helicopter parents that do that, or is it just common sense?
No. I mean, there's obviously people go too far with all kinds of things in parenting. But you don't follow them off to college if they're if they should be in college, and that's, you know, appropriate for them to go off to college. You don't –
well, and it's also in Korea having a law that says between noon and 6 a.m. adolescents
should reasonable.
Be, But if it was my – where's my kid at between 12 and 6 a.m.?
That's right. Why is that happening?
Law, I think my kid's
– well, but there's a lot of stuff a lot of stuff going on these days. You know, it's – I would just – I don't know. I get overwhelmed when I try to think of these problems because they're massive. I was out at Skid Row the other day doing some interviews, and I was just shocked at how the population has grown there and all drug addiction.
Younger.
Every bit of it.
I think
younger,
what I see, younger.
Younger and sort of insolent about it. Like, hey, man, this is where I practice my disease. I came down here. The drugs are better. They're more available. I can prostitute myself. What the fuck? I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. It's a strange time.
Right. And part of it seems to me it's almost – I think homeless should be protected and helped, but it's almost like this is my right. It's almost like the PC thing. At what point – are we being judgmental by looking at the situation?
We should be judgmental. We should use our judgment.
Right, but it isn't politically popular at some point.
But that's the problem right now, right?
I think. No, I agree.
And I just feel like I've been saying this to Adam lately. It's like we need some kind of leadership. We need somebody going, hey, let's everyone get together. Let's inspire people to be better and do better and change and, you know, have hope and not be so sort of beaten down or expecting to be taken care of or just giving up and just getting loaded all the time. You know what I mean?
I hear a new book idea.
I don't know about a book, but you certainly may hear some more sort of energy coming out of me that way because I just think it's time. We need new ideas and new leadership, I think, and just need a new attitude.
No, I agree. Am I wrong? My thought is where is that coming from? Because, again, it just seems like the ebb and flow or the push in society is not towards that direction. But what you're saying is absolutely right.
It needs to happen.
Right.
Well, what do you see as the problem? Are you like Adam? Adam whines and crabs and complains. And he sounds like an old crotchety conservative.
Well, yeah, he's great.
Even though I know he's not. I know he's just sort of complaining about people's lack of taking responsibility for themselves and their own families.
Yeah, I have
people being willing to judge.
Yeah, I wish I could get paid for he's bringing out good points. Turn no left on a
What? So what do you say? What's your opinion? Click it. What do you think the issue is?
Oh, I don't know. I can't even put those
because you're seeing a lot of it in the ER every day. I mean, you're seeing it pour in there.
Yeah. Well, I go to things like. Things most people go to, increased education.
Right. But getting people engaged in the education.
My best friend's son 3 years ago overdosed on OxyContin and Xanax, and I'd been sort of working with him for a period of time. He was abusing – my friend found him.
It's awful.
But after that, then my buddy started meeting other parents. I mean, obviously there's a – you know, the
pill epidemic is unbelievable.
And going into heroin when they can't afford the pills.
That's right.
So the opiate issue, what do we do? So I have another friend that's got $30 million in a fund. He wants to start a nonprofit of some sort. And I said, hey, you know, so I would ask you, what if you had $30 million bucks and you wanted to approach an issue. Right. Would you do opiate awareness or high schools? What, Norco is like the second most commonly abused substance now in high school seniors. And I guess I would. Hadn't talked to you before, but is it education?
Or is it some sort of lobby organization to fight?
Because it's really out of control. I mentioned this on Adam's podcast a couple days ago just about the opiates, and somebody texted me from Alabama, and he runs a drug lab, and he said their community is so overwhelmed with opiate. He said to me, you know, can you donate some of the money for us to do an education intervention program in our county?
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. But the point is, I just mentioned it, and yeah. Here, it's just every county I think you go to in this country, the opiate, the pills going to heroin, but the pills alone. I was looking at another study looking at opiates, and it surpassed, it's the number one killer of
teenagers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it's pills. And
number
it's pills.
Of deaths involving
but
commonly
it's
prescribed.
But our peers, let's be clear, our peers are handing that shit out. I'm so heartbroken by that. We've created this.
Yeah. Well, I have another study.
Yeah.
They're looking at 17 factors. They said one of the problems, they felt that internet, people buying on the internet had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
They said it's doctors, perception, peer pressure, but it's 17 factors. They said it's such a complex problem, the opiate epidemic. But
it's not
so
that complicated.
What would you do?
It's trauma.
Right.
It's trauma. It's overprescribing. And it's sort of availability perception thing. Those are the main three things. So I don't know.
So here's a $30 million.
Well, people would go, we did more replacement. That's what I think a lot of people would advocate. That would save lives.
I think it would make
a horrible chronic ill population.
In our emergency department, well, here's just one other anecdote. I mean, there was a robbery, I think it was in Long Island, of a pharmacy. Four people murdered, and the families of the perpetrators were suing the physicians that had prescribed opiates for those guys initially or during
Right, because they cut them off. But and by the way, not for the prescribing, but for the cutting them off. Because when you what's happening is it's not just they can't afford the opiates that send them to the street. It's that doctors are going, I understand now.
Right.
I made a drug addict try. I got to be careful. I'm going to get in trouble for that.
Right.
No, you're a bad patient. No more for you.
Yeah.
As opposed to calling them in with their family going, hey, I didn't mean to do this, but you're addicted and we got to send you to treatment. They're not doing that. They're just cutting them off. That's sending them to the streets.
Right.
So distressing.
It is. There are also cases of suing physicians for cutting people off because they were neglecting their pain.
Oh, no, no, no.
Pain and suffering.
Hang on a second. Those physicians get threatened with criminal actions.
Right.
They go to jail for that, not just
they
get sued.
They have gone to jail.
They go to jail. Yeah. That's where the problem came from in the first place.
Right. So it's a very complicated issue, but it's an issue that I know I face every day and on both sides of it.
And I think I would take that money and form some sort of a philosophical, philanthropic organization to give people meaning and change attitudes. I really do. Bob, I'm going to meet with Bob Forrest in a couple of minutes. He just happened to text me while we were here. And he and I realized that the thing we're dealing with that is the most serious right now is not just the opiates, which is bad enough, but these kids that are strung out on this stuff have no direction. And no engagement. So literally, he'll go, he goes, but I was getting sober. I wanted to be a musician. There were things I wanted to do. I wanted to help people. What do you want to do? And they're like, huh? I mean, don't you want to do something? You want to sit over your dad's garage and smoke pot and take Norco all day? Is that what you want to do? Their response to a child, these are young people, 18 to 25-year-olds, to a kid, it's, I don't know. What do you want me to do?
Interesting. And
I don't know what you want me to do. That's the young people who are in trouble today have zero sense of what the purpose of life is. So I would take that money and try to find some sort of – this is where I started this thing, some sort of inspirational something, whether it's a political movement or a philosophical movement or something, for God's sakes. We got to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I get overwhelmed when I think about this stuff. So there you go. On that happy note, we gotta break it up. I'm so glad you sort of challenged me like that, though, because it's clarifying my thinking a little bit. I've been whining for the last couple of months that we need to start a new political party or something, but we need a new purpose.
A focus group.
It's a purpose.
Because just what you're thinking now is the process that has to occur. I don't know. But
a leader, somebody who goes, hey, let's get going. We're going to make a good life. We're going to teach you how to have a good life. not a happy life necessarily, but a good life where you contribute and make a difference and are nourished and have satisfaction. Got to do that.
Yeah.
Because we're drifting. We are drifting. And that's where all this other bullshit is coming from, even including a willingness to get well from some of this other stuff.
So. Right, right. Well,
all right, guys. Thank you so much. Dr. Bruce, where should I look for you? Give me some Twitter handle again and all those good things.
At Dr. Bruce H.
Okay.
Twitter.
Dr. Bruce H. And how about website?
No.
Anything?
No.
Facebook?
Oh, Facebook? I'm on Facebook. How do you get?
What's your Facebook? No, but Gary and Chris looked at me like, I forget.
Those guys.
This is where Adam comes in.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. This is Corolla Digital.